Blog Talk Radio.
Image. Blessings and greetings. Greetings and blessings, everyone. We're alive because the Most High is blessed us to stay alive. In Torah Chaim, instructions of life. Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness. Torah Rachmim, instructions of mercy. This is now the 119th class of soul class. S being an acronym for 7. O, oldest or original. U, universal. L, laws. The 7, Noahai Kamam. Sheva Mitzvah Noah. Class 119, search of authentic ancient Torah, class number 27. Just to tersely remind you all, blessed souls, that the 7 Noahic commandments, which are axiomatic commandments, which actually branch off into many other commandments for all the blessed inhabitants of the world, kol bo'e'olam, are as follows. Number 1, not to blaspheme the Creator with the Creator's name. Number 2, not to serve idols. Number 3, not to commit premeditated acts of murder. Number 4, not to commit acts of adultery. 5, not to steal. 6, number 6, not to eat a limb of an animal while still alive. Number 7, to raise up righteous statutes which can be easily equated with the normative human intellect for the entire human family, called Mishpachat Adama, such as charity, education, taking care of the food and food and ecosystems and etc., etc. Blessed is our Creator, blessed souls. We're happy to announce, blessed soul, which should come as no surprise to you, that you are one of the chosen few, blessed like the rain of heaven and the earthly dew, to possess a divine image to empower you to move off the line of scrimmage. Your Tzelem Elohim is no telepathic dream. Rather, according to a divine plan inclusive of every woman and man. And see Genesis 1:27, quote, "And God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them." We hope to explore on today's show meditations of gratitude, still trying to extract out of Genesis 2:7, quote, "Then the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul." As well, we hope to vibe out on teachings from Rambam, Rabbi Nachman of Breslev, Path of the Righteous Gentile, Compassion Towards Humanity in the Jewish Tradition, Hasidic teachings, and whatever may or may not come down the pipeline when we're broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com. And if you're going to hear the archive version, Blessed Souls, I've listed some links which I recommend for you to help and strengthen your connection to your divine image. And before we get into the appetizers of the show, meaning to bring on to our guests who will bring the main course, I just want to mention here that any views expressed by myself or any of my guests are solely our own, and we're not into cross religious or faith debates. Rather, we're presenting based on our own studies over the many years and our interactions with people wiser than ourselves, and some we would also call our students, and some our study partners, family and friends. And so basically you're getting a distillation of our experiences to humbly share with you on Blessed Block Talk Radio. So today, looks like we're only going to have one co-host, unless we get a surprise from other co-hosts. Our normative co-host is Rambam advocate, teacher and student, Dennis Ryan. And maybe we might be surprised by our Noahad Chassid Ron Williams. And, of course, if anyone wants to call in and make the show a little bit more organic, wherever you are, in Indonesia, Nairobi, Kenya, South America, California, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, anywhere, you can call in at 347-838-8669. And after Dennis makes his presentation, I want to share a very sweet story, short and sweet, that I got from a woman from Amman, Jordan, which makes my soul rejoice that someone from Jordan is connecting to the show and wants to share some good news. Dennis, good morning. And we have another caller in. Dennis, before I allow you to speak, let's just bring another caller. Is that our resident Cohen Baruch Hafinger? Hello?
Hello, Shmi Cottrell. Yam Tov.
Oh, Cottrell. Ben Dod Cottrell. How are you doing?
Very fine. Happy Hanukkah. Yam Tov, Ben Dodim.
Amen. And I just want to, Cottrell, it's been a while since he has been on the show. He is the president of the Booker T. Washington Business League, an organization designed before his time, but he took it over to try to empower individuals and hopefully groups of individuals in the New York City area to try to enjoy greater economic prosperity. Cottrell, with that being said, we're going to let Dennis have the floor to say whatever he wants, actually, and then you can chime in. Then I want to share a story of some good news from the country of Jordan in the Middle East, right next to Israel. Dennis, take it away.
Well, I thank you, Don. I never feel like I'm in a position that I can say whatever I want because we are restricted. What has happened in the past, and just as you gave the introduction, we are following what has come into the past so we can extend it into the future. Be that as it may, this is a season where Christians all over the world are celebrating. They're rejoicing and they're full of joy. And they sing songs and they go about for at least a day feeling happy to a certain extent. But in their songs, there's a well-known song that's repeated over and over. It just happens to be two Hebrew words that are put together. Mm-hmm. The two words form the word Emmanuel. Most Christians don't know what the word Emmanuel means or represents. they usually think it sounds like some Spanish or Hispanic person. But what happens is they don't realize that it means God is with us.
That's
but
right.
The part that gets to me is, if they go out of their way for one day out of the year, why are they not honoring every other day of the year regarding Emmanuel? God is with us.
I would like to point out.
Yes, Carchel.
All right. One of the things that I ask Christians frequently is, what was the role of Emmanuel in the book of Isaiah chapter 7? And when you read the book of Isaiah chapter 7, you learn that Emmanuel is a witness to Syria attacking Jerusalem. And as he grows up and as he's able to eat butter and honey, he will witness that Jerusalem will triumph over the attack from Syria.
Mm-hmm.
That is the role that Emmanuel, who was the son of Isaiah, plays in the scriptures. A lot of Christians will say there was no baby Emmanuel, for reasons that I prefer not to go into. It has that. It was a prophecy, but there was no baby. That's a lot of Christians believe. Some believe there was a baby, Emmanuel, and another baby.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to thank you both concerning that matter. I now would like to share with you, gentlemen, and anyone listening out there, and again, anyone who's listening in is encouraged. We can have another two callers in for live discussion, make the show more organic at 347-838-8669. Now, I got this email after I posted up on Facebook the fact that the show was going to be on this morning. And I got this from a Vera Gubran. You know, in Facebook you can befriend a lot of people, and some people you interact more through emails, or sometimes telephone calls come about. And I actually, you know, one or two people, Carchel being one of them, I've actually met, you know, face-to-face. So I get this email from seems to be a young woman, Vera Gubran, and she tells the following story. 2 days ago, I was saying here on Facebook to friends that we miss rain and snow in Amman, Jordan. Now, I'm not exactly sure. I didn't have a chance to look up on the map what part, if that's in the north of Jordan or in the south. I know in Israel right now there has been rain. They even expected a little bit of snow flurries. And then she reported, God flooded us yesterday with rain. Thanks be the Lord. And I think that's a wonderful thing. I think that's, to me, this is the right Facebook, one of the inner dimension reasons why Facebook is existing, that, say, like a Jew like myself in Brooklyn, New York, Kessler Crown Heights, can get pasted on my wall on Facebook. You know, we can probably call on someone from IT, an information technician, where exactly cyberspace is, aside from as it manifests in our computer boards and monitors, that here I can host a show and can serve as a forum for a woman who either is probably either Christian or Muslim in her faith, living in Amman, Jordan, praising the Most High for the needed rains that came down in Jordan. Dennis, any reflections on this matter?
Well, rain is water, which is life. Without the water, especially in those sort of arid lands, water is considered a type of a blessing because it's so hard to get. But that's part of nature, of renewing things and having that water come by. So if you have enough faith and belief, it will come because it has come over the centuries. It's not going to stop all of a sudden. Problem is you just have to have enough fortitude to wait for the next rain that comes.
True. But then the idea that here we can hear good news through the agency of Facebook that, you know, I am... I, as a Jewish man here in Crown Heights, am not advocating sending missiles into Jordan. And she didn't promote sending missiles into Israel, because at one time Jordan and Israel were bitter enemies up until the 67 war, and a little bit afterwards, after the 73 war. But here, Facebook can serve as a pedestal, so to speak, or a springboard for her somehow liking something. I think we're doing something right by having this radio show. And she connected to my wall to give good news that rain fell in Jordan, and then she praises the Most High. I'd like to get some feedback with you and then Carchola, on that matter, how Facebook can be a method for bringing the human family together.
Well, it isn't only Facebook. A lot of good is being done in the world. Unfortunately, a lot of people are conditioned to the media that thinks that they're bored with the good stuff, so we have to give them the more exciting bad stuff. And people are distracted by that. And that's a bad thing, because there's a lot more good that's done in the world, but it's not emphasized as good. We somehow take it for granted, oh, that's just being good, but look what happened over here. These people shot each other, a bomb blew up. They're looking for something spectacular. For some reason or another, we have a hard time getting people to concentrate on what is good, even though it's happening all around them. But here's a lady who decided to share what she believed was something good. Well, you won't see that on any newspaper. You won't see it on any TV program. And no one's going to write a book about it. Why? Because it doesn't really sell. But good is really part of our lives.
True. Karcha, your feelings on sharing good news on Facebook and your perceptions how through cyberspace more people can get together than ever could be imagined, say, 20 years ago, 50 years ago, 500 years ago?
Well, to be honest with you, I am very careful about what I put on Facebook about myself. 2 months ago, I retired from the U.S. Navy Reserve after 21 years of service, and I just said that I retired. I didn't on Facebook, I didn't say I retired from what. Facebook has been monitored by people who are hostile to America, who may be hostile to all sorts of other people. And I just keep my Facebook postings to a cautious minimum. You know, I don't go too deep into my life. It's fun, you know. It helps you connect with old friends, but I mean, you have to be cautious of what you put on Facebook. You know, I'm
right.
Cautious about what I put on Facebook.
For example, Cultural, like for instance, I'm looking at a picture from your website and Facebook, and I see a gathering of people, and it said Halo Barber with the training on, and it mentioned Carolyn Thompson. Is she a politician? That name sounds familiar.
That was a real estate investment course I took in Maryland. I am allegedly in that picture. I don't see myself there, but I'm allegedly in that picture. You know, I mean, they moved to North Carolina. I remember the names of the two teachers. I do not remember the names of the other students in the class.
True. But you attended yourself.
Yes, I did. Yes.
Okay. But I'm saying I think that's a positive thing that people can see that in midlife or in their 20s, maybe they finished high school, maybe they finished college, they got the graduate degree, maybe they even got a higher degree. But that to publicly display a picture, I mean, in my humble opinion, to publicly to present on the internet a picture of people attending, say, like a real estate seminar or a class or training, whatever you want to call it, is to show other people that there is life is a process of ongoing education. So in that case, it's to help people get a better grip on the real estate business, whether to buy a house, sell a house, or to become real estate agents. So that's to me a very positive thing, where you know where it can give access to others who might just need to see that one picture of I don't know, it looks like about 12, 15 people, maybe more, sitting together to learn about how they can get their hands on the market to try to improve the quality of their lives, and hopefully with the improvement of their quality of lives, they can do more good in their individual and general communities.
That's true, and that's what the Booker T. Washington Business League is all about. However, I want to say that particular picture was not posted by me. That picture was posted by Haywood Barbara and his wife Lola, and they posted that picture of, allegedly of me, on my Facebook page. The picture of me with the flag behind my head, I did not post that picture. That was a picture taken by a friend of mine, which I did not post. The picture of me with my hand on my chin, that I put there. The picture of me with Jack Kemp, that I put there. The picture of me with Joe the Plumber, that I put there. I'm going to put some pictures of myself with Andrew Breitbart and Star Parker. I'm going to put those there. People put their own pictures of you on Facebook. That's why I'm a little bit... I enjoy Facebook. I know people who wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. But, those particular pictures, the one you just talked about, I did not put that there. It was put there by friends of mine, by people in that real estate class.
Okay, listen, we're in an age now where I've heard that this could be also a little, giving us a little insight into the future where, it's going to be more evident to us how our words and our actions have to be taken more seriously. I mean, there was a time where, I think this is what gave great power to the despotic leaders of ancient, I don't know about ancient history, but last 500, 600, 800, 900 years ago. I mean, perhaps we would have stopped, who was the guy, Khan? The despot.
Kublai Khan.
Genghis Khan.
Genghis Khan. I mean, even back in Egypt, if someone had an iPod or a video camera, maybe it would have had a different outcome in Egypt. Of course, divine providence had it, that no one had an iPhone to witness the slaughtering of, not just, by the way, everyone should know that, when the decree came down to slaughter the firstborn of the Hebrew Israelite boys, it was also being done on the nations that were living, because Egypt was the America of its time. So it wasn't just that Israel suffered; all families with firstborn children that were boys were being murdered. But perhaps if someone came out, if there was a CNN back then, perhaps it would have been halted in its tracks, as we see many events have taken place in the last couple of years, where international pressure now is being put onto countries like Syria and Yemen and other places like. That when they start to oppress their people, not only does the standard Western civilization jump in and say this is a no-no, but even the families of Arab nations in the Middle East are coming out and condemning any type of excessive violence, which unfortunately is taking place in Syria and in Yemen and in Egypt, of course, and even now in Egypt there are cries for excessive violence, even though the initial quote-unquote Arab Spring was supposed to erase that. Any comments, gentlemen, on this phenomena with modern technology?
Well, I saw on the internet, and even though I don't care for the person, Rachel Maddow had a segment on the internet whereby in Iran, the cell phone and Twitter and tweet are being used to counter the repression of the Iranian government. I discussed that. I presented that to people some years back. It is a tool for good, and it can be applied. The government tries to crack down on Facebook, Twitter, and other social networking sites. But one of the last things I presented when I was in the Navy was a documentary on how the internet cyber warfare works in that regard. In fact, maybe I'll post that to Facebook pretty soon, yes. And
okay,
even though I am no real friend of Rachel Maddow, speak to the issue that time.
Don?
Yes, Dennis, I was going to go to you and ask you what your thoughts on these matters are.
Well, what happens is technology is being used in a way that people can hide things that was hidden in history. I mean, now you're seeing it as it happens, and you're seeing people's feelings, their take, and they're taking little pictures with their cell phone. They can take movies with their cell phone. It has little cameras, little eyes, and this is constantly being distributed to the informational highway, you call cyberspace, that runs around the whole planet here now.
Right.
So that any part of it can easily be seen very quickly, as fast as electricity goes through the air, the airwaves. So what happens is the people who were doing dark and bad things in a lot of places are having a hard time controlling that because everybody is seeing it. It's being exposed. Now, whether or not good or bad things emanate from that is immaterial. But you're not going to be able to hide things like killing, you know, or 10,000 people or something like that anymore. Someone's going to take a picture of the bodies or the people shooting it, and right away everybody's going to know about it. So what happens is you're forcing the human reaction to occur, and that's what happened in the Arab Spring, where these people came together to protest. But what happens, they found out, or they learned later on, that newspapers all over the world were getting involved in this. Well, you not only get public opinion, but you're getting the whole opinion of the world involved. It's a different story now.
Yeah, it's very deep. Who would have thought 35 years ago that such thing? You know, I'm sure that, you know, Dennis and Karcha, you're both a little, you gentlemen are a little older than me, but 35 years ago, I think Pong, you know, that simple computer game was, you know, still like a pretty novel thing, and probably a year or two later, maybe in the early 80s, all these sophisticated computer games came out for children. But now 35, 36 years later in 2011, standing on the eve of 2012, that, it makes the world smaller, and I think that's a good thing. And may, you know, human beings, again, all of us blessed and graced with that divine image, start to really internalize the implications of becoming a smaller world. Well, you know, it is truly a global village now, and paradoxically, we still have close to 2 billion people living lifestyles of 4,000 years ago without direct running water and electricity, as we are graced with and blessed with. And it really is a luxury when you consider, you know, in comparison to those 2 billion human beings who still have to go to the brook or the river or the lake to pull out their water, and they have to come up with means of preserving their food, either by salts or spices, that, you know, we live in a very comfortable world, and of course we still want to see an upgrading in it. Dennis, can I ask you please to pull out some Guide to the Perplexed, and then we can, you know, have that as our first course of today's meal.
Okay, today in the Guide for the Perplexed, we have chapter 51, and it's an oddity because it shows the humorous side of the Rambam. The Rambam normally doesn't show humor because he's so serious and concentrated to make sure you get everything right, but this is a little different, okay? It's page 384, so I'll read directly from it. It says,
okay.
I will begin the subject of this chapter with a smile. A king is in his palace, and all his subjects are partly in the country and partly abroad. Of the former, some have their backs turned towards the king's palace and their faces in another direction, and some are desirous and zealous to go to the palace, seeking to inquire in his temple and to minister before him, but have not yet seen even the face of the wall of the house. Of those that desire to go to the palace, some reach it, and some go around in search of the entrance gate. Others have passed through the gate and walk about in the antechamber, and others have succeeded in entering into the inner part of the palace and being in the same room with the king in the royal palace. But even the latter do not immediately, on entering the palace, see the king or speak to him, For after having entered the inner part of the palace, another effort is required before they can stand before the king at a distance or close by, hear his words to speak to him, or speak to him. I will now explain the smile which I have made. The people who are abroad are those who have no religion. Neither one based on speculation, nor one received by tradition. Such are the extreme Turks that wander about the north. The Kushites who live in the south, and those in our country who are like these, I consider these as irrational beings, and not as human beings. They are below mankind, but above the monkeys, since they have the form and shape of man, and a mental faculty above that of the donkey. For those who are in the country, but have their backs turned towards the king's palace, are those who possess religion, belief, and thought, but happen to hold false doctrines, which they either adopted in consequence of great mistakes made on their own speculations, or received from others who misled them. Because of these doctrines, they recede more and more from the royal palace, the more they seem to proceed. These are worse than the first class, and under certain circumstances, it may become necessary to day them as to extirpate their doctrines in order that others should not be misled. Those who desire to arrive at the palace and enter to it have not yet seen it, but are the mass of religious people, the multitude that observe the divine commandments, but are ignorant. Those who arrive at the palace but go around it are those who devote themselves exclusively to the study of practical law. They believe traditionally in true principles of faith and learn a practical worship of God, but are not trained in philosophical treatment of the principles of the law. They do not endeavor to establish the truth of their faith by proof. Those who undertake to investigate the principles of religion have come into the antechamber, and there is no doubt that these can be divided into different grades. But those who have succeeded in finding a proof for everything that can be proved, who have true knowledge of God, so far as true knowledge can be attained, and are near the truth, whatever an approach to the truth is possible, they have reached the goal and are in the palace in which the king lives.
Well, Rambam didn't spare too much. I think he took off his gloves there. But I want to go to a point that I was not aware that he said, and I want to be very, very careful about this, because he made a very stinging commentary about the Kushites, which is the African people, about their minds are above the donkey. Now, I want to tell you that Rambam knew very well that innate human intelligence is something that is according to one's blessings and everything. And I think that he was commenting on the cultural atmospheres that they were being raised in, that I don't know, you know, what experiences he had, because I don't remember reading of his experiences. But at the same time, too, Rambam lived in Egypt. And I'm not sure if he composed the Guide to the Perplexed while he was living in Egypt, or before he got to Egypt. But I will tell you this, Lubavitcher Rebbe points out that the Egyptian society that the Israelites were living in at the time of their first entering with the patriarch Jacob and Yaakov, and Joseph, of course, we read about in this week's Torah portion, they were the most intelligent civilization of their time. Not only that, they had a system of irrigation that it doesn't really rain that much in Egypt, and the Nile River was the primary source of rain, water source, fresh water supply, that would be, irrigation streams had to be connected to it. Now, I'm trying to find a source. I'm trying to look to get in touch with some rabbis here in Crown Heights. Hopefully I can have an answer by this time next week. If there were natural irrigated pathways created, or did the Egyptians do it? Now, if the Egyptians did it, that testifies to an extremely high level of intelligence. And for instance, the Paro, the king of Egypt at that time, knew all the languages of the world except Hebrew. So when Rambam makes a statement like that, that can be misread or misunderstood by others as being, you know, being racially ethnocentric. And I just want to remind everyone that he was that statement should be understood in the context of, in fact, a comment on some sort of cultural dominance at that time. And I want to let everyone know that I'm in the process of reading very slowly a graduate study college, a graduate level program paper that was submitted at Harvard University. That was my good friend Shimon Warren, who prays in a local congregation with me, the Frankel Shul in Crown Heights, him and about six other people wrote a paper called about the New American Academy dissecting the study of a book that was written by David Nyberg in 1981 called Power on Power. And basically that it goes on, one of the gists of this study that was done, as all of them earned their master's degree in higher education from Harvard University, is that when the masses become stupefied, it's because there are controlling powers that be that want everyone to think alike. And when people start to think alike and they start to, so to speak, mimic each other, then someone like Rambam come along to say, his statement was not to say that these people could not advance, but perhaps he was making a very stinging commentary on the cultures that these people were emanating from that was stupefying them. So, gentlemen, any comments, questions, concerns on my reaction to that statement by Rambam?
Yeah, I take it with not a grain of salt, but he said he was smiling at this. So it was done, I think, in more of a humorous fashion rather than a condescending fashion or anything like that. But he says, in our country, who are like these. So that's Egypt that he's talking about, no doubt about it. But he was classifying these people as it relates to a palace and whether you're in it or out of it.
Right. Kotra, any questions, concerns, or comments on what we're talking about now?
Not at the moment.
Okay. So now I'd like to go to another teaching from Rambam, from his Shmona Brochim, his eight chapters, where he's talking about spiritual illness now, and we'll take little bites out of this, and then our co-hosts will give their feedback and thoughts and concerns about these matters. But Rambam talks about spiritual illness. And he says that, you know, in the early generations, that the philosophers of those generations made a declaration that the body can incur, unfortunately, states of illness, and it can experience great health as well. But at the same time, the soul can have states of illness and health. But we have to understand this within a certain context, because the soul is not a tangible entity that we can taste, touch, feel, or smell. He defines the soul with these type of tendencies when it's healthy. When a person is engaging in conduct which would testify that the soul is healthy, then those are the elements of the soul lead a person to good, kind conduct and pleasant deeds. Now the illness of the soul would reflect a state when the soul and its elements are leading to evil conduct, damage, and acts which we would consider to be reproachable. So right now, when Rambam says we're not going to talk about the health and illness of the body, because that's more in the realm of science, the science of medicine. Nevertheless, we can use as an allegory physical illness to help us better understand when the soul is either healthy or ill. So let's say a person is ill and their senses are confused. So they might taste something sweet, but they might interpret it as being bitter, or something bitter as something sweet. They may consider things that are pleasurable to be unpleasurable at that time, and derive pleasure from things normally that won't be good for them at all, or healthy for them. For instance, they might eat soap or charcoal, dust, or very bitter and sour object that no healthy person would not only not desire, but would be disgusted by such ingestion of such articles of, I wouldn't even call them food, they're just pieces of matter that normally used for other human experiences. So in the analogy, considering the sickness of the soul, those who the Rambam wants to qualify as wicked and unworthy will consider the undesirable to be good and the good to be undesirable. For the wicked will seek motives that are in fact evil, and yet, because of the weakness of his spirit, he will think of them to be good. Dennis, any comments, and then we'll go to Cottrell.
Yes. Moses Maimonides has a unique position in history because he combined the total patient concept to a complete one, so that he's not only worried about your physical problems, but also your mental. And he said that if you're going to really be a good doctor, you must worry about both. Well, included in that is, I mean, if he was treating a person, and this is my opinion now, is that he would talk to them and find out, do they have God in their heart or their mind? If they didn't, he would realize that this is a problem, because you must believe and hope and have faith in something. So he would worry about that as to whether or not the person was going in the right direction. So he said that you can't just worry about making an incision or giving them pills, but you have to worry about their mental state as well. So he's the first guy who basically came out on a professional level and said, if you want to do a good job, you must do a complete job.
Well, he came out before the American Medical Association, before they could take away his license for such an approach. Cottrell, any reflections on these teachings?
All right. There was a doctor on television, I believe his name is Dr. Bernal Cave, who used to talk about people who had the unhealthy habit of eating crunchy starch right out of the box. It had to be crunchy starch that they would eat. And that's a very unhealthy practice.
Mm-hmm.
To eat such thing. It's made for cleaning your clothes. It's not made for digestion.
Right.
And today, everyone knows, you know, is the most joyous day in the Christian faith.
Right.
A long time ago, I saw a documentary on television called Religion and Ethics in the News, and they were talking about a Buddhist leader was saying that Buddhists should stay away from Christmas because it's not our tradition. It's not our tradition to celebrate Christmas. Now, yesterday, I went into an Indian food restaurant, and I have a very good rapport with the people in that particular restaurant. And I saw a woman wearing a Santa Claus hat, you know. And since she is from India, I had always assumed her to be a Hindu. So I said, I mean to be nosy, but wearing a Santa Claus hat, and I always assumed you were a Hindu. She says, no, I am not a Hindu. I'm a Muslim, you know. And I said, oh, I didn't realize that, you know. Now, I just got into my car, and someone stuck this postcard on my car, and guess what it says? It says, reviving the soul within you. Challenge your soul. Our purpose is to convey the pristine, life-changing method that will change your soul and question what it thought to be true. Then we provide it with a rewarding alternative. We aren't missionaries, for the truth is self-evident. Our job is to simply make it available. Upon that, it glimmers on its own. In every sincere heart, it has yet turned to stone. Now, it doesn't mention anyone's name, but by the website and by the toll-free number, I can tell who's putting this out. Can you guess who's putting that out?
I have no idea.
Okay. The toll-free number is 1-877 Al-Islam.
Uh-huh.
Yes. The website is www.freequran.org. So people are doing a lot of reaching out these days, you know. My point is, Christmas was started about 400 A.D. when the Emperor Constantine became a Christian. And he took the Feast of Saturnalia, he brought that into Christianity, which some Christians reject because it has nothing to do with the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
And technically, Christmas is not a Christian holiday. It's something that was brought in to Christianity some centuries later by Emperor Constantine. But you see Buddhists celebrating Christmas. You see Muslims celebrating Christmas. You even see Jewish people doing that, you know. No. That Feast of Saturnalia must have been one invention because so many different cultures cling on to it, even though it goes against their own religious teaching, you see.
Mm.
So what we've got to do is make a firm commitment that we have chosen to follow the Torah and the Tanakh. I'm talking to us on this multi-conversation here. That
right.
is what I have chosen to do, to follow the ways of the Torah and Tanakh. And show respect and courtesy to other groups, but not take up their
yes.
way. I mean, in the Tanakh, we learn that we are not supposed to follow the ways of the people that we left behind, and nor are we to take up the ways of the people that we will meet as we move forward. We have to remain true to our own ways.
Mm-hmm.
That is from the Tanakh. That's what I happen to live by.
I agree with you. And again, the thrust of this show is to try to promote the idea for further research on those. This humble effort will probably hopefully reach their blessed ears to consider the integration, assimilation, digestion, and internalization of seven universal precepts, which predated Islam, predated Christianity, and by the way, predated Judaism. But gentlemen, I want to go to the next section. I want to conclude this section on Rambam here, and I thank you for your potent thoughts on this matter, Cartrell. So Rambam goes on to say that when a person who is sick becomes aware of his or her illness, and he does not know the science of medicine, you know, common sense tells the person, go see a doctor to get instruction how to follow a certain course of action to get better. So the doctor might say to him or her, listen, certain things he has to stay away from and certain things he has to engage in. And even those matters, those medications, say, or those treatment processes, they might seem bitter to him. They'll actually be something that will help cure the body. And this will enable the person to choose the good in the future. Of course, we're speaking on an allegorical manner concerning the wellness of a person, and to be repelled by, which is truly repulsive. So similarly, in the analogy, Rambam goes on to say that someone who has spiritual ailments should seek out the wise, because the wise are known, and this is interesting how the Rambam, the wise in this context are those people who heal souls, who will warn them against the evils that they consider to be good, that the person thought were good, but the wise will tell them it's not so good. And it will heal them through activities. That's a very important point. Activities that will heal the character traits of the soul, as we explain in the following chapter. And those people have spiritual ailments, but are not appreciative enough of really the negative implications of a spiritual element, and instead think of themselves as healthy or appreciate them but don't desire to be cured, Rambam says, will surely perish as would an ill person who follows his desire without being cured and refuses the treatment of the physical doctor. With regards to the nature of people who are aware of their base conduct and yet persist in it, so the Rambam says, he quotes the in the book of Deuteronomy, quote, to add satisfaction to thirst, unquote, meaning the person wants to satisfy their thirst, but really they're merely adding to it and they can't quench it. And certain types of earthly desires, we don't have, everyone can figure out what we're talking about here. And but however, those who are unaware of their weaknesses or their spiritual ills, which meant in this context are called soulful ills, King Solomon wrote in Proverbs 12:15, quote, the way of the crooked is straight in his eyes, and he listens to his advice, and who listens to advice is wise, unquote. Meaning, a person who will listen to the advice of the wise becomes wise himself, for they will show him or her the true path, and not the path that they guess is true. And then he says in chapter 14, verse 12 in Proverbs again, quote, there is a way that appears right to a person, but ultimately its ways are death, unquote. And also with regard to people who are spiritually ill and don't know what will really benefit them and what will harm them, it is said in again, Proverbs chapter 4, 19, quote, the path of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know over what they will stumble, unquote. And the Rambam goes on to say in the next chapter, we'll be discussing, hopefully next week's show, by the way, parenthetically speaking, in our humble efforts, the craft of curing souls will be described in the fourth chapter. And I know Dennis wants to add some potent commentary about what he just heard from Rambam.
Yes, I do. What happens is the Rambam says it in many different ways, and not to confuse our listeners, but very simply put, it's when your perception is out of whack with reality. Now, the reality can be stronger, or the perception can be stronger, or either of them could be weaker. What happens is, if they're not in sync, you have a human problem. That problem can be resolved by addressing it to other people who may help you with your perception, and they can put things back into place, or at least let you think about it, so that you can do it. So we usually look to any type of religious leader because we trust that they try to help us. On top of that, most humans will usually go to an older relative, sometimes the oldest relatives they can find, hoping that that person who is aged would have some wisdom to help them out. But just the idea of taking inventory as to whether or not you and your perception is in alignment with reality has to always be adjusted, fine-tuned, and reviewed, because it's very easily to be deceived and go off on the deep end.
Yeah. Coach, any comments on these teachings?
They're inspiring. Promotes caution, promotes the fact that you should look before you leap.
With that being said, I want to pull up now, gentlemen, a song. And this song is part of, you know, what's customary on the show is that we try to play music which is sensitive to the nature of the aim of our show, to not only share what we consider to be the wisdom of the Torah and human intellect, but as well music to give everyone a little bit of a break. Now, the song I originally wanted to play, for some reason I can't queue up, but what I hope to play now is a song by a great artist from Jamaica. His name is Jimmy Cliff. Now, Jimmy Cliff, for me, I feel a personal connection to this man because in the 1960s, and maybe Cartrell and Dennis experienced as well, my parents used to take me more than one occasion, because I think it was a couple of years, the New York World's Fair in Flushing Meadows or Flushing, Queens, close to the old Shea Stadium. Yeah. And Jimmy Cliff at that time was part of a contingent of Jamaican musicians who performed there. And in fact, at one time, although I think the film eventually got ruined, you can see me dancing to the music of some tribal band from the mainland of Africa. But I might have even heard Jimmy Cliff back then. But when I first started consciously hear his music in 1991, I was very taken by the hope that was expressed in his music. So now for the next 4 minutes or so, we're going to take a musical break, and it's my great honor to introduce a song on acoustic guitar, Jimmy Cliff singing Many Rivers to Cross, talking about the test that a person has to go through in life and realize it's just one more river to cross in the creation of the Most High. Hold on, everyone. That's where we are. That's where I am. We all find find ourselves at that place sometime as human beings, right? So, we know that there's another way to get out of it. But until that time, we know that we got many rivers to cross, but I can't seem to find my way over. Wandering up alone, and I travel along while cliffs are over. Blessed souls, that was Jimmy Cliff, Many Rivers to Cross, and we all have many rivers across to cross over in the Most High's creation. I mean, biblically, there have been rivers crossed, and the Red Sea was crossed, and in fact, there's a prophecy in Isaiah, the Euphrates River will be crossed at the time of the redemption. I'd like now to go to Rabbi Nachman's teaching about one of the ways to acquire the Torah, and this is something that it's a very inner-directed teaching, and we have to be very careful when sharing this teaching with other people, blessed souls, that we don't become judgmental, because some people are not that happy with their lives for various reasons, and we cannot judge them, but rather we can share this teaching for ourselves, and as per our wisdom and our opportunity and our blessings of the Most High, that we can share it with a person when you feel they're ready to hear this message, to hopefully empower them. And it's one, I think, of the beautiful ways to help a person really appreciate their experience of being a human being on the Most High's planet. And this attribute, in order to absorb the Torah and internalize it, making the flesh of our flesh, the bones of our bones, the blood of our blood, and the soul of our soul, as Rabbi Nachman says, "Hasameich b'chelcha," rejoicing in one's portion. Rabbi Nachman goes on to say, "You should know, my beloved one, my son, that it's not possible to merit the acquisition of the Torah / internalization, that except by the fact that a person doesn't confuse himself with that which of the portion of another person." That one of the things that we see as a prophetic teaching in the prophet Ezekiel in chapter 33, verse 24, it is written, Echad Hoya Avraham, that one was Abraham, the patriarch Abraham, the father of Isaac, grandfather of Jacob, Israel, and of course the son of Terach, that Abraham served the Most High through the qualities of oneness, that he did not look upon any sort of creation in the world in terms of, you know, getting confused by their situation, meaning he stood resolved in his heart to realize, I am one person, not better than anyone else. In fact, we see in the book of Genesis, Abraham calls himself dust and ashes in terms of his self-effacement before the Most High. That we cannot look at other people and become jealous by what they have, and not to be and become angered by what we don't have, but rather to appreciate to what we have in this world is what we need at this particular time. Of course, we would always appreciate an addition in our health, an addition in our wealth, an addition to the blessings of entailing our immediate or greater family or community. But the point is not to let anything. This is a very hard service lesson. So it's not to be confused by something in the creation that would take away with our joy in realizing the Most High loves us, and therefore when we have that type of consciousness, that we can actually be free in our mind and our cognitive faculties to absorb the pristine intellect, and we can have success in our learning. And Rabbi Nachman goes on to say, look only upon yourself and don't be confused by another person. And by going in this way, a person can merit to an acquisition of Torah, and a person should try to understand through the actions of how they think about their self-perceptions. Again, not to get involved in thoughts of self-grandiosity, but again, to avoid feeling anger at oneself for not having, to become jealous by the haves of what other people have. I'm sure Dennis and Cartrell, seasoned veterans of living on this blessed earth, have what to say about this teaching by Rabbi Nachman. Dennis, could you please take the floor?
Yes. You should be thinking of good, positive things that we put on life. You cannot relive it, so therefore, think of good things. And while you're doing that, you might as well count your blessings. If you've been living on the planet long enough, you must have accumulated something of a positive nature. Why? Because that's where we're pointed in. That's where the path leads to God, somewhere along the line. We have accumulated some positive things. We must concentrate on that and expand them wherever possible. However, we do not worry about what other people have, because that's their business. Your business is taking care of yourself between you and your God. You cannot use another person to rationalize or to come up with excuses. That's a waste of time, and you're only kidding yourself. At the same time, we must be humble and remember that all humanity is nothing but grains of sand on a beach. They all look the same. They act sometimes the same motion that the water causes them to do, but we're no greater than a grain of sand on the beach.
Beautiful. Cartrell, your thoughts on this matter, how a person should rejoice
that's
in a portion of this world.
Yeah, that's quite inspiring from Dennis. And I just want to say that, yes, we should count our blessings. We should also learn from our mistakes and not repeat them.
Mm-hmm.
And pass on to young people and other people lessons to warn them against making the mistakes that we made earlier. That's what comes to me. And passing on valuable knowledge to young people is another way to commit a random act of kindness.
Beautiful, beautiful. I'm just going to go back to a teaching. I think I've repeated at least once on a previous show. It's actually concerning the time of Purim, even though it's the time of Hanukkah. But the festival lights of Hanukkah is about shedding the consciousness of making that resolve to stand up for what is right. So I guess it kind of fits in tangentially today's program. Lubavitcher Rebbe once taught at a Hasidic gathering, which is Purim. Now, Purim is, aside from Passover, where we drink four cups of wine, that the festival of Purim has actually a teaching within the Jewish tradition of law that a person is allowed to imbibe and drink more than necessary, meaning not just one cup of wine, but until a person can drink until they can't tell the difference between the blessings of Mordechai and how Haman was cursed, the Amalekite, for trying to destroy the Jewish nation in one day. Of course, he wound up on the gallows instead of Mordechai. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe commented that, listen, some people cannot drink, whether it be an addiction or health reasons, said, let's say diabetes. So he said, listen, think a positive thought. And think about that positive thought, how you feel about it. And think another positive thought, and another positive thought. And the Rebbe went on to say, you can, in fact, think so many positive thoughts, whether you want to choose it to be about what you see in the world, something about in your life, in your family, the blessings you have, to the point where you actually can generate a chemical reaction in your brain by thinking so positively, or in this case, let's say, thinking about what you have to rejoice in your portion in the world, that you can actually cause a chemical reaction similar to fulfilling that statement in Jewish law where a person should drink to the point they can't tell the difference between blessed is Mordechai and cursed is Haman. And that's a very important point, that we should be rejoicing in the fact, blessed, so that we are in fact able to have positive thoughts. Those of us, when I talk to Cartrell and Dennis, I'm talking to two men that are well-versed and immersed in positive thinking. I think that's, and I try to as well, and I think, you know, we're like souls on many levels, and that's what we're trying to continue on with this humble type of effort. So, Dennis, any response to what I just said?
Yes, there was an American pastor who, by the name of Norman Vincent, who wrote a bestseller that was on the bestseller list for many years. It was called The Power of Thinking. So there's a lot of room in people's thoughts. The problem is that to get them to period of time is not an easy thing to do. That's why we have other things that can help us move along, and studying the good book or the Bible is another way of doing it, of bringing your concentration back to some of those basic principles and ideas. Because sometimes we get distracted to the point that we forget what our origins are and where we're going to end up and where we're going to be and what is our objective in life. So we must constantly be aware of these things. Now, positive thoughts are good things, but we cannot strain out all the thoughts that are non-positive. They creep in our imagination, our free will. So we have to control that to a certain extent. And that's why we encourage people to read the good book, the Bible, to get some of those basic ideas that they may have overlooked and should be reminded of.
Beautiful. Cartrell, would you like to make any further comment on we move on to the next section of the show?
I don't have a comment at the moment.
Okay, very good. So now we're going to go, friends and blessed souls out there, we're going to go now to the Path of the Reish Gentile, which was written by Rabbi Chaim Klorfin and Rabbi Yaakov Rogalsky, which Ron Williams is always recommending whenever he's on the show. And we're going to go into the following teaching. It's a lot of information, but we'll take it slow. And it goes as follows. We're going to start with a verse in Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 39. And it goes like this. Know this day and take it into or unto your heart that the Lord is God in the heavens above and on the earth below there is no other, unquote. Teaching number two from the Path of the Righteous Gentile, quote, which is, I'm not quoting, but I will be bringing up a quote. In the beginning, when the Almighty Creator said, quote, in Genesis chapter 1, verse 6, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, unquote, that the words and the letters of his blessed speech, being eternal as he is eternal, and those words coming from the eternal Creator stand eternally in the firmament of the heavens as the activating life force in creation. And this is a teaching which is brought down in the Tanya, the inner dimension of Torah, by the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, where he goes on to say, were the Most High to retract his words or cause the letters of his speech to depart, even for an instant, the heavens would immediately return to absolutely nothingness, just as they were prior to having been created by God saying, quote, let there be a firmament, unquote. So I know in recent days there's been a lot of talk in the mass media about the idea of quantum theory or quantum physicists trying to find, quote unquote, that God particle. And unfortunately, they're still not able to take this type of teaching into a laboratory or smash the proton of a verse in Genesis or extract an electron or go to the nucleus of this teaching, whereas we who have simple faith in the scriptures of the Torah look out and see there must be something maintaining this creation. Dennis, your thoughts on these matters?
Mother Nature was created by God for a purpose, and that is to make sure that mankind is carried through on all their trials and tribulations as they try to attain heaven. We don't know everything, just like nobody knows everything that's in the Bible. But we have to remember that we don't call God and use the word all for nothing, because we cannot be on the same level as his. So, yes, we have scientists that are always trying to figure things out. And the God's particle, based on the colliding particles, we have always tried to figure out, and this goes back to Einstein, by the way, is that...
Go now. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Cartrell, you're signing... I'm sorry, Dennis. You're signing off, Cartrell?
Yeah, I gotta go.
Okay, take care. Thank you for participating in today's show.
See you, Cartrell. So what happens is scientists going back to Einstein have always known from a theoretical viewpoint that whenever a reaction occurs, physical, chemical type of things regarding little rings of all the elements in all the element tables, that we cannot account for 100% of the energy that we thought was there on a theoretical basis. So by looking for this God's particle, people are saying, well, maybe we have solved it. But the news is that, or it's not news, is the closer we get to finding the truth is the more we're uncovering. That does not necessarily mean we find the answer, because we're not that advanced. So that's another reason why faith and belief is so important, because we know what God has done on a theoretical basis because we practice it and we live it. The scientist is working to figure out, can they really come to a complete formula for all the energy that's in the world, in the universe? They have a very long way to go, I'm sorry to say. I congratulate them on their efforts so far, but mankind hasn't figured everything out yet. But that's why we have faith and belief.
True, true. In fact, I want to just chime in on that, Dennis, that that the Mashiach, the Messiah who we're waiting for, and it doesn't matter to me really if we disagree or agree who he is, the fact that he will, we believe with simple faith he will come, that he will reveal these godly particles, not just as they are in a some sort of multi-million, or I don't know if it's a multi-billion dollar device to smash particles, but he'll show, he'll reveal to us teachings. What did a person accomplish in an interpretative way, in an interpretative way, meaning from within the context of point A to point B, and also how when you, a person did an act of kindness or prayer or learned, they not only filled the atmosphere of point A to point B with positive things, I mean, Giloy of Elokus, the revelation of godliness in the creation, he also shows how it extends out exponentially to point C all the way to point Z. And that's something that no one, even the prophets of old, whether it be the prophets of Israel, the prophets of the Noahites, the Adamic prophets, the prophets that preceded even Noah, who was a prophet himself, that these are the type of things that we're expecting for. It's a very exciting time to be living in, as any time in the history of creation was, but particularly our generation, where we can have this energy transfer, you know, these little particles of consciousness beaming out, that somewhere around the world, that someone's listening to our humble efforts, that they can contemplate, wow, you know, that the time of redemption is a time of expansion of knowledge. And not only that, it's going to be motivating, the expansion. And the essential thing is the expansion, the exponential expansion of good deeds, one to the other, that, you know, to make this world what it originally was. It was a Garden of Eden. It was a Gan Eden. I just want to go a couple more teachings into this, Dennis, and we will go to the compassion community and the Jewish tradition, and then winding off on meditations of gratitude. So the first 10 statements in the Genesis are called the 10 utterances. And again, going back within the context of that axiomatic teaching, that were the letters of God's speech to return to their source. The entirety of creation would instantly cease to exist, become nothingness as it was before the beginning of the initial 6 days of creation. So he goes on to say, and I think this even might be, let me just see, I think this might be a teaching from Rambam. No, this is still from the Tanya, from the Gates of Unity and Faith, that one who contemplates the foregoing, what we just mentioned, can begin to understand how God was and is and always be one and unique before he created the world, and remains equally one and unique even after he created the world, and that the creation of the world is in no way added anything to his completeness and perfection. Now, this might seem to be a paradox, because how can it be that a creation of the world added nothing or affected no change in the Most High? So this paradox can, in fact, be resolved by thinking about that when we compare something to the Most High, whose speech is the sole life force in creation. The world is absolutely and literally nothing and non-existent. Dennis mentioned before about the human family being like grains of sand on the beach. The first Lubavitch Rebbe talked about the whole planet as being a mustard seed in relation to the creation. So going back to the fact that the Most High speech is the sole life force in creation, this is because in his presence, everything is considered absolutely non-existent, literally null and void, and there's no place devoid of his presence. As its testimony comes in the form of the prophetic teaching from Jeremiah, chapter 3, verse 24, "Do I not fill heaven and earth?" said the Lord. So let's compare our speech to the Most High speech, if we can, so to speak. When a flesh and blood person speaks, the words and the breath of his or her mouth are felt and seem to leave the speaker and to be things unto themselves. But the Most High speech is never separated from him, because there's no place devoid of him and nothing outside of him, for he is eternal and infinite. And that's backed up by that prophetic teaching in Jeremiah 23:24, "Do I not fill the heaven and earth?" Dennis, any questions about these concepts or comments, concerns?
I have my own personal view here that sort of parallels and fits into what you said, Don, and that is, there are many mysteries, there are many unknowns that emanate from God, but we have belief and faith, and we keep on going. But the fact of the matter is, we must live our lives, and we must do the best job at it, regardless if we get any of these answers to the mysteries or the unknowns.
Mm-hmm.
We may never get them. But whether we know those mysteries or unknown things, we're going to be judged by on how we lived our life here. So even though we would say that if we could be better if we knew these mysteries or these unknowns, we cannot wait for it. Because time goes by, and so does your time on Earth. So therefore, if we get them, fine. If we learn about it, fine. But the love between you and your God is a constant.
Beautiful. Thank you, Dennis. Okay, so let's now go on to compassion towards humanity in the Jewish tradition. And here's a teaching based on a teaching from Pirkei Avos, the ethics of the sages, of the fathers, so to speak. So Rabbi Judah, or Yehuda Nasi, used to say, quote, which is the right path that a person should choose for him, and we'll add herself as well, that which is honorable to a person and brings him or her honor from mankind. And that's based on the Pirkei Avos teaching, chapter 2, teaching 1. So commenting on this, and again, we're plucking from Rabbi David Tzir's work, which I think is extremely important. I wish upon every Jewish person to read this, as well as every blessed son or daughter of the children of Noah, which encompasses the whole human race, human family, I should say. So the commentary, and this is coming from the Lubavitcher Rebbe from about 21, 22 years ago, is that which is honorable to oneself is pointing in the direction of the potential of human beings to unite with the Almighty without intermediaries. And then after a person has fully developed his or her required connection to the Most High via scriptural and oral tradition teachings, he or she should seek out to develop an intimate private relationship with the Most High. However, the connection with God that a person makes also must bring him, quote-unquote, honor from mankind. Now, coming close to God must not take away one from the world. Now, we're going to explore in a minute what the Rebbe was intending, honor from mankind. As it says in the Talmudic teaching of Kedushin, which is the oral Torah traditions of, you know, how does a Jewish man and wife get married, according to Torah teachings, oral and written traditions, that a person's conduct should be, quote-unquote, good to the heavens and good to the creations, unquote. That is, the good one does should be felt by others. So while striving for spiritual heights, a person must find favor in the eyes of his fellow men, which is inclusive of Jews and Noahides alike. And again, the stress of the Rebbe here is that not that we're going to run PR campaigns to promote ourselves as good people, but we're going to engage in physical acts of kindness, expressions coming from our mouth, physical expressions of brotherhood, as Dennis and I try to accord each other publicly here through our public efforts, and the other people are welcome to come on board on the show, and other matters. So finding favor is not a popularity contest. Finding favor is a spiritual repercussion of a person being engaged in good things, good actions, good speech, good thoughts in this creation. Dennis, any comments, questions, or concerns on this teaching?
Yes. We all should know the difference between good and evil. We also have a certain amount of common sense. And we're not looking to put ourselves up on a neon sign or a billboard on a highway, but all humans are judged by their actions. Your actions must be acceptable to you and to the people around you or you interact with. Common sense plays a big role in this. Why? Because it's based on our intellect that was God-given. So if you have a connection with God in any way, shape, or form, it will come out in your actions. And your actions will come out on the good side. Unless you want to look at everything from what I call the dark side. And that is, I don't need God, I can go ahead and rationalize, and I know exactly what I'm doing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that causes a lot of internal problems with yourself, as well as your fellow man. So, think positive. Do good.
Amen. Thank you, Dennis. So we're going to wind down the show, Dennis, and blessed souls, anyone listening to the live version, or hopefully we'll be, I hope upon that people will be listening to the archive version as well and sharing it with another person. That's what we charge people. It's for free to listen to the show, but we charge you to share it with one other person. So a point of meditation springing off a verse in chapter 2, verse 7, in Genesis, where it said, "The Lord God formed the man, dust from the ground, and he blew in his nostrils a breath of life, man becoming a living soul." So we start as dust, yet we were blessed and anointed with a living soul directly from the Most High. So a meditation of gratitude is to serve this Creator who gave us a living soul and to serve him with great enthusiasm. So when you observe something which you understand according to your studies or instruction you receive from others to be something which connects you to the Most High, as we would classically say in the textbooks, as a commandment, concentrate on trying to do it completely. So you're able to fulfill it perfectly, as much as a person can do something perfectly, without omitting a detail. So when you study Torah or pray, you should banish all worldly thought from your mind. Do not think of anything but what you're doing. Also contemplate before whom you are speaking your prayers or your words of Torah. Now, at the end of we have a custom in Israel and became incorporated in our prayers. At the end of one of our prayers, we say the verse from Psalms chapter 19, verse 15, "May the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable to you, O God, my rock, and my redeemer." So if a person has had some sort of thoughts of foolishness that can creep up in their prayer, so a person could say, you know, how can I accept the Most High to accept the meditation of my heart when we didn't give full thought to our words? Well, one of the ways that we can give better thought and more concentration in our words of prayer, whether it be looking into a book or not looking into a book, is first of all being enthusiastic with the consciousness of knowing, hey, I'm about to offer a supplication before the Most High. Dennis, in your concluding statement, would you like to make any comments, questions, or concerns about this teaching?
Yes, what it basically says that we have been endowed by God. Every human at some time in their life must answer their own question of what am I, who am I, and what am I doing? Because you must have the realization, the mental realization, as to where you stand in relation to your life, your end, your beginning. And if you don't have a connection with God, maybe it's time to start one, because how else are you going to get the help? You can read the Bible, but if you don't really have a mental connection with the Lord, then you're wandering. Do you want to end your life wandering around?
I certainly don't. And on that note, Dennis, I want to thank you again for your words of wisdom, from reading from Rambam's Guide to the Perplexed, and all the points you made today, and this day, whether it be the Christian holiday or the Jewish holiday, maybe somehow someone knows hasn't been revealed yet. Maybe today we'll want to reveal there's an Islamic holiday or a book, whatever. Every day is a holiday, is when we add a little bit of holiness to our day. And with that being said, I want to thank everyone for participating. If you listened actively to our live version or the archive version, and we want to end our show with some nice music by my good friend David Dome, will help us take us home with a song called "Soon Will Come the Day" by David Dome, to get us to the home of our heart, where there abides a peace of the Most High. And if you were to put your hand against your heart, blessed souls, let's say a doctor put a stethoscope against your heart, it would go bum 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 bum, you know, each one according to the heartbeat. But if you were to put the Torah stethoscope against your heart, it would say, "I am the living God that is inside your heart. What are you going to do about it? I am the living God who loves you. I am the living God who is merciful. Connect with me." And you can do that, blessed souls, by learning more about your divine image. And that's part of our goals on one of our mission statement goals in Soul Class, blessed souls, to hopefully help another person reconnect with their divine image, to connect with the Most High. "Soon Will Come the Day" by David Dome. Take care, everyone.
gonna put up my fight. Heading for the dawn to a much better I'm